Welcome back to the D3 Golf Guys podcast. Okay, we are on the precipice of the national championships, and we have got a ton to talk about tonight. We've got a whole lot of results. We've got to talk about the movement in the rankings, who's in, who's out, things that are up in the air, mass hysteria. But first, a mea culpa. From the last episode, I got confused that the Collegiate Conference of the South, where Huntington in Piedmont are, had an automatic qualifier. That does not go into effect until next year. So they will all be in Pool B, and everybody should be happy about that based on the results that we will get into later. Okay, but first, our friends at Titleist. Gang, the new TSR driver and fairway woods from Titleist are awesome. I have not hit clubs this good in a long time. Drivers going straighter than it ever has been. Five wood looks amazing. I'm getting to par fives easier in two. It's a weapon on the shorter par fours. I hit a wedge into a green that I have not hit less than five iron into the other day. So, hey, it's been an incredible transformation in my game. It can be in yours too. So hit up your Titleist rep, your local pro, your PGA Superstore, wherever you can get those Titleist clubs, and get them in your bag today. All right, now let's go into the results from this past week. And there is a ton. And so we may not get to everybody. We're going to hit as many of the highlights as we can. Let's start with the ladies, where the big news was coming out of California, where Pomona had been rock solid. Number two in team in the rankings. Pretty hard to beat. But, you know, we said, hey, the all three of those schools in California are pretty good. And last time, remember, we thought all three of them were getting into national championships. So they conducted their SCIAC championship at Los Serranos North in Chino Hills, California. And Claremont Mud Scripps comes out and says, we're here and we're ready. And even Redlands comes out and plays well that first day. So Claremont goes out and gets a 7-stroke lead over Redlands and 8-stroke lead over Pomona. Whoa. That's when you saw me starting to put tweets out about, whoa, we could have a potential bid steal. On day two, Pomona reasserts themselves a bit. They shoot 296, but Claremont's right there at 299, and Redlands is 298. So now Pomona's in front of Redlands by one, but still trails Claremont by five. Going into last day, Redlands is going to shoot 294 and lose ground, where Pomona threw everything they had at Claremont, and Claremont held serve beautifully. Both teams shoot a 284, four under, for Claremont to win the SCIAC on the women's side. Absolutely astounding, great playing. And the Claremont Mud Scripps ladies will punch their ticket to nationals. Now, Pomona being number two in the country probably doesn't have much to worry about, but depending on some of the other conversations that we have later, we will find out more about rankings and nationals after that. Okay, next on the docket, and we're going to kind of just stick to some of the team scores here. There's just a ton of results. We got to try to get to that so we can get to the stuff we really want to focus on around nationals. The other big tournament was the one we called out going into their conference championship, which was in the American Southwest Conference, which, by the way, we don't really know what's going to happen to next year. There's going to be some teams leaving, some teams going to D2. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens in Texas from a conference play perspective into next year. But University of Texas at Dallas and Mary Hardin Baylor have been going back and forth all year, and this was going to be it. And based on the short number of at-large bids available, neither one was ranked high enough to where they were going to be comfortable getting an at-large bid. So it was winner-take-all in the American Southwest. And the other teams in that conference really didn't have much of a shot. It's going to be those two. So day one, Texas at Dallas comes out, stomps their foot in the ground and says, we are ready to go, 296. Mary Hardin Baylor with a 303. Okay, so they got a 7-shot lead going into round two. Round two, both teams play outstanding, 297, but no ground gained for Mary Harden Baylor. They're still seven back. And I watched this one closely throughout the day. Third round, Mary Harden Baylor gets out pretty quick, and it's down to like three or four shots. But it stayed that way the entire back nine. The University of Texas at Dallas ladies just gutted it out. 301 for them, 297 for Mary Harden Baylor. And the University of Texas at Dallas ladies get the automatic qualifier, and they will be going to nationals. Mary Harden Baylor looks to be on the outside at this point. I think their number one player probably has a good shot as an individual. But ooh, just a tough one. And I was watching, like, it was down to like the last three or four holes, and it was three or four shots. And as you all know, you know, three shots can go away in a heartbeat when you're playing, you know, when there's 10 balls in play. So just an outstanding tournament there that I was really impressed with the performance of both of those teams as we went through that. Okay, continuing on with the ladies, let's go to the Liberty League. The Liberty League in Guilderland, New York, where the NYU ladies triumphed. They get Wellesley. Now, Wellesley had been ranked higher, but NYU comes in and they put it to them. They won by 18 shots. They went 308, 297 the last day. That 297 was awesome. They separated even more so. They only had about a six-shot lead going into that second round, and then just blew the doors out. So the NYU ladies said, we're going to put more purple bags at the Women's Nationals. So they are very happy to be coming from the Liberty League. Okay, also on the women's side, USA South Women's Championship. The Methodist ladies, they will be going to Nationals. Look, this is still the makeup of some of the CCIS because Huntington's there and Piedmont is still there on the women's side of things. I think there's still more to do on the women's side in the CCIS conference. So the women kind of stayed in the USA South. It's one of the reasons why automatic bids and everything else is still all up with her grabs in the other one. But Methodist, 307, 307, 300, good playing, but nothing great. But they'll be at Nationals, and look, if it's you get a tough day, they could be there. But nice to see them kind of get that win and get a little momentum heading into Nationals. Okay, next up on the ladies' side, we'll go to Waynesboro, Pennsylvania for the Centennial Conference Championship at Waynesboro Country Club, where the Marymount ladies from Virginia come away with a ticket to the national championships. They finished first over Gettysburg, second, and Franklin and Marshall third. Look, I'm not really talking about scores here, but hey, you go out and you get the job done. You're going to nationals. Congratulations, ladies. That is awesome. Awesome work. Just great, great plan. I'll be very excited to hear and see from them as we get into women's nationals. Okay. And lastly, on the women's side, we had the SAA conference, where Center was probably the favorite, and they come away with the win. Really nice playing. 296, 302, 291. Solid three over that last day at Greystone Country Club in Dixon, Tennessee. It's just west of Nashville. And they beat Rhodes, who came in second, Suwannee third. So, again, about who we had expected there, nothing else kind of chaotic in that space. And so if we kind of just to sum up on the women's side, you know, the women's side is a little less chaos, as we usually get, right? A little less chaos. The things that we're looking at there, we'll talk more about in the rankings here in a little bit. But again, the only bid steal that we've had so far on the women's side was Pomona losing to Claremont Mud Scripps, and we had both of them in anyway. So that's not a huge deal yet. That could become a bigger deal, as we'll discuss later on when we get into rankings and things. All right. Now, let's move over to the men's side, where we had more results. The reason why, men's nationals is a week before the women's nationals. So you're getting some of the women's teams are finishing up as we kind of continue. The men's teams, there's only about two or three conferences that are left that were left out for this weekend. So those that I know are going to be the NCAC, in Ohio and the CCIW in the Illinois-Wisconsin region. There's one more, and I haven't figured out where that is. You guys can ping me and yell at me at which one it is. There's a lot of conferences, and I'm pretty good with a lot of them, but there's one more I'm missing, and I don't have it on my thing. If you need to find it, double-check our website, where our guy Ron Cow has been doing an awesome job compiling the data and talking about who's in what pool and everything else. So if you have any questions about what we're talking about on here, go check that out. It's a great resource. He's been doing a great job for us, and we'll keep leveraging that in years going forward as long as Ryan will have us. But so a special shout out to Ryan for doing that great work. Okay, on the men's side, let's start with USA South, where the number one team in the country looks like the number one team in the country. They shoot 18 under for 3 days. Greensboro, number two in the conference, shoots 49 over. So they won by 67 shots. Two players, it was all Methodist at the top of the board. Now, what's interesting about this is, you know, we were like, okay, well, what are the rankings going to say here? Right, what are the point values going to be here? And at this point, I'm just laughing. Like, well, they absolutely killed the team and they shot a million under par. So every time that's happened everywhere else, they've gotten a bazillion points. No, they didn't. They got more points for finishing like second a couple weeks ago. Like, I don't know. I just strokes gained, strength of field. I can't determine what's important, and I don't know that anybody else can. So I've just come to kind of giggling and smiling and going, isn't that awesome? So, but the Methodist guys punched their ticket. Not that they were worried about it, but they will be the number one seed most likely at Nationals. All right. Up in the Northeast at Brunswick Golf Club in Brunswick, Maine, we had a little bit of an upset and where we had seen Trinity College, Connecticut play some really good golf lately, and they had been ranked fairly high, which was interesting. And so they were in the most recent one, they were 29th in the rankings. Middlebury, Amherst, okay, you know, on the men's side, it's a little bit different. But kind of from out of nowhere, Tufts University comes in and says, we'll take that. And they punched their ticket to Nationals, which is awesome. So in round one, actually Bates College comes out with the lead, 294. You had Hamilton and Middlebury tied at 297 in the first round. Tufts was 296, Amherst 297. So it's really tight after the first round. And then, you know, Trinity comes out and shoots 303. So they're well back after the first round. And then Trinity comes, they fired a 293 the last day and moved up three spots in the, they were sixth after the first round. They finished tied for third after their 293. Hamilton goes 298, Bates goes 302, but Tufts comes in with a 291, best round of the day by two, and they win by six shots over Hamilton. Outstanding job there by the Tufts University gang. So we will be seeing them out in Las Vegas land. Awesome. All right. Okay. Moving into Ohio, where we had the OAC Men's Championship, where they played at River Greens Golf Course in West Lafayette, Ohio. Not Indiana. That's where Purdue is. West Lafayette, Ohio. That's right. Two bordering states have the same city in it. I could give you some more of those cities in that area, but it would just confuse you. But the OAC gang here, you know, if you look at kind of rankings and things like that, Otterbein had been kind of the class of everything that was going on in that world, and they come out on top by one over John Carroll. John Carroll's had a good year. And so just to kind of see who was going to kind of come out and who, man. Okay, so three rounds, John Carroll comes out with 290 the first day, and Otterbein comes out with 294. And really, they kind of separated after the first day. Mount Union was 298, but then kind of backed up a little bit more the second day. So, okay, so John Carroll's got Otterbein by four after round one. Round two, Otterbein follows it up with a 290. And John Carroll shoots 299, so now they're up five. So they're up nine. they're four from the day before. They're up five. They had four rounds here. Going into round three, Otterbein's up five strokes. So they go 289 in round three. John Carroll goes 287. Now they're only up three strokes. Get into the last. John Carroll and Otterbein are separated by three strokes. And we get into the final throws of everything that's here. And Otterbein shoots 298 and John Carroll shoots 296 to win by one. Otterbein wins by one shot. Just amazing. And you know, you're looking at the scores and it's like, okay, it was coming down to the last couple of holes, you know, and who was making par and you know, who was making bogey. It was tight because Otterbein kind of stumbled out of the block. They got it to be able to get, John Carroll was leading on the front nine. They had played really solid on the front nine, but then Otterbein came back a little bit. And boy, it was just back and forth. Really great tournament. Would have been a really fun one to be at. Cause you could have just really focused on those two schools and just lock in and watch those five pairings and just go, okay, here we go. But congratulations to Otterbein. They will be attending Nationals and punching their ticket to that. All right. Next up, the SAA of Greystone, the men's side this time, where the number four team in the country, Oglethorpe University, wins their conference three-round tournament. They end up winning over Suwanee. This was crazy. Oglethorpe didn't lead. They didn't shoot the best round any day, but they won the tournament because they were second pretty much every day. But round one, you know, Oglethorpe gets out early, but center is not in the top three kind of expectations. They go out early and shoot 283, and they've got Oglethorpe by a shot after the first round. Oglethorpe shoots 284, Suwanee 293, Barry 290, Rhodes 296. So you're like, okay, we were kind of thinking Suwanee and Rhodes, can they go get Oglethorpe, right? All right, so after the first round, Oglethorpe's in second. Center kind of comes out of nowhere. You've got Barry got a little bit out of nowhere in third, and then Suwanee, and then Rhodes. Round two comes around, and Rhodes says, wait a minute, we're going to play hard here, 282. And they have the best round of the day. Oglethorpe shoots 285, and their lead grows because center shoots 302 and kind of moves back. They kind of said, nope, we're not ready for this just yet. Rhodes surges back up ahead. But again, you know, Oglethorpe had them by 12 after the first day. So they shoot 282, but there's too much ground to pick up there. Barry goes 295. They back up a little bit. Suwanee shoots 293. Well, then on the last day, Suwanee's like, we got to try to make a run here. And darn it, they made it interesting for a while. Suwanee got hot and hotter than you can want to believe. And they go shoot 284. Just remarkable. They had one guy in there was one under and took a triple. He ended up not counting because of that. And that really hurt. But boy, Suwanee played great that last day, 284. Oglethorpe goes out and shoots 292. Again, solid third score of the day. Millsaps actually shoots 290. But Barry shoots 292. Rhodes, 299. But so again, Oglethorpe doesn't shoot the best score any day, but they win by nine shots in the end. So Oglethorpe will have the automatic qualifier. I think Suwanee is safely in the tournament from an at-large perspective. I don't think anybody else from the SAA will be making it, and we'll go through more of that here in the near future. Okay, men's Liberty League, yes, at Shenandoah Golf Club at Turning Stone, beautiful, beautiful part of the country there, Verona, New York, where, as sort of expected, the University of Rochester comes out, but boy, they had a fight to get there. St. Lawrence really came strong, and so did Skidmore. Which is a little bit of a name that has kind of been lost. When I was playing Division III, Skidmore was a top 6-7 program. Looks like maybe they're starting to kind of resurrect some of the history of their program. So Skidmore goes out day one and shoots 288, and they've got a 6-shot lead on St. Lawrence and an 8-shot lead on University of Rochester. Just unbelievable. Then round two, Rochester and St. Lawrence separate. Skidmore shoots a good 296, but St. Lawrence shoots 286. Rochester shoots 287. So St. Lawrence has got a 3-shot lead going into the final round against Rochester. And I mean, everybody kind of said, well, Rochester scored the favorite here. And Rochester comes out and throws up 287 again. They go back-to-back 287s, one unders, to really kind of put it away. They end up winning by 3. St. Lawrence had to put up a good fight. 293, not a bad score. Skidmore, though, comes back with 290 in the last day to make it interesting. They were only 4 back of Rochester and 1 back of St. Lawrence. So really good, fun tournament there. And congratulations to Skidmore's Campbell Jenkins, who had a hole-in-one at number 14 in round one on that one. Congratulations, Campbell. But a good tournament. So some of these things is, you know, if you're a D3 golf junkie or just a golf stat golf junkie like I am, when you get some of these tournaments and they're tight and you're watching them and it's plus one, minus one, birdie here, bogey there, 2-shot swing, 3-shot swing. It could be a lot of fun, especially when you have those 3-round tournaments where somebody gets out early who you're not expecting, and then can they hold on? Can they, you know, especially when, can you put the bag down next to everybody else who you thought would be there? You know, the other team in that conference, Rensselaer Polytechnic, Dish kind of got off to a slow start, 301, and then a 304 on round two, just put them way behind. They shot 286, the best round of the day, but just not enough there. So Rochester will be going to Nationals. We'll get the chance to see the gang from Rochester again. We saw them down at Jekyll. So congratulations to the Rochester team. We will see you guys out in Vegas. Okay. Now comes the time for when every once in a while, as a podcaster, I have to have takes. And every once in a while, those takes are taken and put on a bulletin board. Well, there's some gentlemen in the Midwest, Eastern Midwestern area, who took that bulletin board material and said, oh yeah, we'll show you, Mr. Podcaster. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about the Franklin and Marshall Diplomats. That's right. The Diplomats had this great post, and they have me talking about what's Franklin and Marshall done. Franklin and Marshall, congratulations. You guys have used my words to your advantage, which is why I do this stuff. And they have come away with the Centennial Conference Championship, and they will be seeing me, yes, me, in person in Las Vegas. Now, guys, I'll tell you right now, on Sunday at the awards block party, come see me. I'll have some swag just for you, because the Instagram post with my running my yap on it could not have been any better. And so I've got some swag for the Franklin and Marshall guys. But hey, look, great plan. They come out and shoot 295 the first day. They got a 7-shot lead. They extend it on day two. They shoot 285 for a 3-under that second round, grow their lead. Last round, best round on the golf course, 286. They beat Swarthmore by 12 shots. Franklin and Marshall, we'll be seeing you in Vegas, and I got some swag waiting for you guys. So find me at the block party. I'll be getting ready to video the awards ceremony, but I'll have a bag of swag just for the Franklin and Marshall guys. So congratulations. Okay, so other tournaments we were watching very closely. One was not because it was a lot of highly ranked teams, but because 3 teams went into the final round tied. So that's in the SLIAC. That's the St. Louis region. So you had these 3 teams tied for the lead. So here's how it works. So we've got Mississippi University for women. Okay, first of all, yes, this is a men's tournament. The school is called the Mississippi University of Women. It's been co-ed for a while. They now have co-ed sports, but this is still what the school is called. It's weird, I know, but welcome to Division 3, right? Webster, right? The Gorlocks, who we've seen in the past, and Spalding, a team out of that same kind of St. Louis, Kentucky area. Okay, so day one, MUW gets out early to 292. Webster 295, Spalding 297. The other teams in this conference, you've heard them, but this wasn't a chance for them to really win. Even despite some people playing absolutely great, which we will call out. Everybody else is over 300. Okay, round two, Mississippi, MUW goes for 292. Webster goes 289, Spalding 287, and they're all tied going into the third round. By the way, Lake Forest shoots at 293, and Illinois College shoots 287. Illinois College could have won this thing had they not shot 310 the first day. Because they went 310, 287, 276. So people were making some birdies on the last day. You had two teams at 8-under, one team at 10-under, one team at 5-under. So you got MUW, Webster, and Spalding all tied going to the last round. Well, then MUW just steps on it. They shoot 274, 10-under in the last round to win by 5 over Webster, who goes out and shoots 279, 5-under, and loses by 5. Come on. How is that possible? Spalding plays great. They shoot 287, 3-over, and they got beat by 13 shots by MUW. I mean, and here's the best part is, so MUW shoots 274. Lake Forest College and Illinois College both shoot 276 the last day and tie. They were tied for fourth going in, and they both shoot 276 to tie again. Just an outstanding golf tournament. Fun to kind of watch the back and forth and, oh my gosh, who's doing what and where. But just crazy birdies in the final round. Awesome to see. So I will be seeing the MUW group in Nationals. So I'm looking forward to getting a chance to meet the champions of the SLIAC. Okay. Getting into more stuff. On the men's side, now remember, we have had one bid stolen already, which was in the American Southwest, where Letourneau beat University of Texas at Dallas. Because Texas at Dallas was ranked, you know, in that they were 13, but they're now up to 12. So they're in the mix for an at-large bid. Letourneau beat them, or, you know, at the last podcast when we talked about that. Well, one of the other spaces that we were worried about was in the ODAC, where you had Lynchburg, Hampton Sydney, Washington Lee, Guilford, Everett. And so you're like, okay, well, what's going on? Well, Lynchburg kind of holds serve. Well, Lynchburg holds serve, right? They go 297. They've got a 3-shot lead over Washington Lee and Guilford after the first round. They followed up with 293. Hampton Sydney kind of comes back with a 290 while everybody else goes over 300. And then Lynchburg wins by 10 more, and they end up winning by 15 shots and pretty handedly. They go 291 the last day. Washington Lee tried to make a comeback. They were 298. Hampton Sydney hangs on to second to 301. What's interesting about this tournament is this conference tournament and the points jumbled up the rankings from like 2 days before. So the thing about the rankings too is they're updating them more regularly right now. So you're getting a lot more movement in that, mostly because the committees are trying to look at this stuff. Although I heard from one region group that they weren't even looking at the rankings. So some of this stuff could be totally moot, which is what, you know, we talk about anyway, as we start to look at, you know, hey, what are we trying to determine Nationals on? But Lynchburg holds serve. Congratulations to those guys. They were pretty much locked into Nationals, but this just cinches it. But it also probably helps a whole lot of other people try to get into Nationals. Now, last week, Averett was the last team in. Them finishing fifth at this tournament has backed them out, and we'll go through that in the rankings. But Hampton Sydney, Washington Lee, Guilford, they're all moving all over the map when it comes to, you know, where that is. Washington Lee was eighth previously. They're still probably good. Hampton Sydney's trying to get up higher. Guilford is right there. So the ODAC's got a lot of good teams in it. I'm not sure that they're going to get more than one bid at this point in time. I think they'll get two. I don't think they'll get three. Okay. Now, on to the championship that I was attributing to having an automatic qualifier, and they did not. And I think people are going to be happy about that because we'd have had a bid stolen had they had an automatic qualifier. Because, you know, as soon as we think we have Huntington figured out, they end up going and losing conference, and the CCS men's championship held at Dalton Country Club in Dalton, Georgia. So they go out in day one and shoot 287. Piedmont is probably the second best team in that conference. They shoot 293. They got a 6-shot lead. Huntington goes out and shoots 299. Day two, Piedmont 301. They got an 8-shot lead. All right. 8-shot lead going to the final round. No problem, right? No wrong. Now remember how good Piedmont was last year, right? And they had Josh Hebrink, who won the national championship individually, and all their guys. And okay, so there's still some pride left in the Piedmont University Lions. That's right. That's a lion pun. But they come out and go crazy and shoot 285. And they are throwing birdies at the end of this thing and pumping fists and cheering. And it's 285, and Huntington shoots 296, which is 11-shot difference, and Piedmont wins by 3. And it was at the death. And honestly, one of the things was one of the guys from Huntington doubled 17, and then one of their other players bogeyed 18, that both those things counted, and that's 3 shots right there. Just tough, right? Tough, especially when Piedmont's got multiple birdies on 17, 18, and 3 bogeys. Just really, really good playing. 16, yeah, it came down to 16, 17, and 18. The other thing in there is Connor Lane is coming in at even par, and he makes an eagle on 15 to shoot 2 under. It was that close. It was that close. And realistically, Huntington had 2 doubles on the back that just cost them. And they both of the doubles counted. But congratulations to Piedmont for winning. And unfortunately, they do not get an automatic qualifier, which they probably would have loved to have had, because they're not making it in without that. Huntington's probably going to get in, probably through Pool C, because even though they're in Pool B, Pool B is gone by the time we're up top here. So, but I think Huntington will still get in. It'll be interesting to see kind of how the rankings move tomorrow, I guess, or soon. But I think Huntington was 7th the last time I looked. I don't think they'll fall past 11 or 12, and that probably still means they get in. There's not that many Pool C teams in front of them, but hey, it could be. But a great comeback by Piedmont. Huntington, I think, is going to survive and get into nationals. So we'll keep going from there. Now, the other really, really big tournament this week was out in California, where there was a bid steal, and it has had a massive ripple effect to who's in and out of nationals. So Claremont Mudscripts was ranked the highest of anybody out there. Redlands and Pomona were further down, right? This is not the women's side. The women's side, all 3 of those teams were inside the top 12. On the men's side, Claremont's in the top 10, and everybody else was sort of further down the list. Redlands was at 22, Pomona was at 20. And so, while great teams and inside the top 25, outside of the top 15, the at-larges are gone. So they're not in. So they knew, if we want to go to nationals, we got to win this thing. Well, goodness gracious, did they ever. So day one, again, everybody's in it day one. Redlands goes out with 291. They've got a 3-shot lead over Laverne, who shoots 294. 4 shots over Claremont and Pomona, who both shoot 295. And Cal Lutheran shoots 297. So, all right, we've got everybody in it. Well, day two, Redlands goes shoots 288, even par. Claremont shoots 292, Pomona 299, Laverne 296, Cal Lutheran 295. So, okay, you've got Pomona's down at like 5th place, Laverne and is at 3rd, Cal Lutheran's at 4, Mudscripts is, Claremont's right there too, and Redlands is right there, right? So they've got 4 shots, so they got an 8-shot lead. And so you're thinking, okay, Claremont's going to have to really press the pedal down, and can Redlands hold on? Well, the answer is yes, they can. Redlands goes out and shoots 291, which was good enough to win by four. Claremont goes out and shoots a 287. Pomona fires back and gets a 285 in to finish third. But they are five shots clear of Mud Claremont, and they leapfrog Laverne and Cal Lutheran. But Redlands steals a bid, and it's a big bid steal because it's going to push up the at-larges pretty significantly. Claremont, you know, going into that tournament was 13th in the country. Here's the other thing. What will that do to their rankings? And it might not even matter as much this week as it does maybe in a day or so. I don't think it'll have a huge impact because it's already in these rankings. But again, you know, it got them close enough to their average that it didn't move a whole lot. So they're probably still solidly in. So we'll see Claremont there. But Redlands, congratulations. You guys went out and took it, which I love to see. I love to see teams that are down in the 20s come out and get it. But it does usually mean chaos when it comes to at-large bids. So that takes us to two bid steals on the men's side. The one impact on the women's side probably really wasn't taking away an at-large. But we have another looming situation on the women's side that we need to discuss. Okay, so let's jump into the rankings and sort of who's in and who's out. Let's start with the women. Now, the situation going on with women, I am working the phones diligently to try to figure out what is going on. Now, the good news is that women's tournaments are still going on. The men, the announcements for nationals happen Monday afternoon. So Monday afternoon, we will know who's in nationals. There's a couple tournaments this weekend, but everything has to be done before Monday. Monday, they will do the kind of the selection show, but there's not really a show. And we'll know on the men's side. The women's side, I think, have another week, which is why there's still more teams that are kind of out there looking at it. But the biggest thing the biggest question that I have right now on the women's side is dealing with the American Rivers Conference, which is where Grinnell won the conference in the fall. Now, what I've heard from Grinnell is that the conference did everything they were supposed to do. They just haven't gotten anything confirmed from the NCAA. Now, if you remember back to the early fall and we start talking about nationals, we tell you that, hey, these are the numbers, but they can change. Well, the conversation that is up for grabs right now is, does American Rivers and Grinnell, do they have an automatic qualifier? Yes or no? Then it's, does that impact our at-larges? Yes or no? And so if they didn't, I don't think they're in because they're too far down the list. If they do, and they had it before the year, great. Our numbers are still good. If they now have one and it changes our pool B number or our pool C number, which it would, it has to hit one spot, then we lose another at-large bid out of the women's game, and now things are really tight. So that is what is going on the women's side, and I'm checking my phone here every couple of minutes to try to see if I've gotten a response. And it's fairly unfair to me for me to have to ask the committee members. Like, they might not even know, and that's okay. We'll know in time. And what I'm kind of hoping is when we get to this podcast next week, we will know that answer and we'll have a more definitive kind of view of it. But let's go to the women's game where we really didn't have a big massive change in rankings. The biggest thing was NYU and Center flipped. NYU fell back to 17. Center went up to 16, even though both won their conference. Hamilton and Rhodes switched spots as well. That's pretty much it. Again, the women's side, we get a little less turbulence. But if we kind of go down the rankings, Carnegie is still number one. And look, they're a Pool B team. We're only getting two Pool B teams as of right now. So they're in. Pomona is number two in the country. Okay, well, they're no longer an automatic qualifier. They're now in Pool C. So they're going to get the first of the three Pool Cs. Now, here's the thing. If all of a sudden we lose a Pool B, well, Pomona's still in because they're number two, and they're not going to fall past probably five at worst. Number three is Emory, another Pool B. So right now we have two Pool Bs and three Pool Cs. Carnegie and Emory have been penciled in all year as our two Pool Bs. Great. That leaves us with three pool Cs. If Grinnell has to go into pool, if they come out, if they get an automatic qualifier that was not accounted for at the beginning of the year, it comes out of pool B, which means only Carnegie is going to get a pool B, which pushes Emory into pool C, which means number two and number three in the country take up two of the three spots, and now we're in for a lot of fun. If Grinnell's already in that, if they have the automatic qualifier and there are, it was already accounted for, then we keep going. If they don't get the automatic qualifier, they're probably not making nationals and we still have our same numbers. So that's the scenarios that we're going through. I know this is a little bit confusing. I promise it. Go look at the rankings and go walk with me here. We'll help you out. Okay. George Fox is number four in the country. They're an automatic qualifier. Williams, their tournament is still to come. We anticipate Williams winning. If Williams does not win, that would be a bid steal and be a very, very big one. And look, there are teams that can beat Williams in that conference. I don't think that'll happen, but still to be determined. Okay, then we get to number six. That's where Claremont is. Claremont is now an automatic qualifier. Okay. Number seven in the country is Redlands. Well, they're next pool C, so they would be the second pool C team in. So far, I'm at number seven in the country, and I have both pool B spots gone and two of the three pool C spots gone. Illinois Wesleyan is at eight. I don't think Illinois Wesleyan can lose their conference because every time they played anywhere in their conference, their B and C team finishes before everybody else, but pay attention just in case. But Illinois Wesleyan anticipate being an automatic qualifier. The next one on the list is Wellesley. And then the number nine rankings. Well, we just saw them lose. And so now they're a pool C team, and that's the third at large. Which is interesting because Wash U was 10th. They're pool B. They were in last week. They're out this week. Now, you might say, yeah, Mike, but Mike, what about the rankings? Yeah, well, this might all switch out, and what if after this other tournament, Wellesley falls back or Wash U moves up, something happens here. Wash U might get in, but that we're at the number 10 team in the country. Sorry, you didn't make nationals. Hard to believe on the women's side it's that tight. Going down the list further, you have Washington and Lee. They won the ODAC. They're in. Texas at Dallas on the women's side is in. They're an automatic qualifier. St. Kate's is in. They're automatic qualifier. Amherst is in Williams conference. So Amherst at 14, if they beat Williams to get in, they're not in right now. If they win to get in, Williams would take the second spot. Redlands would take the third based on these rankings. And Wellesley and Wash U would both be out. And then you have the first at-large team out is the number nine team in the country. Trinity in Texas is in their automatic qualifier. Center is in, they automatic qualified. NYU is in. Mary Hart and Baylor, like we told you, out. Carleton out. Methodist in. Middlebury and Hamilton are in that Northeast Conference to be determined. Rhodes is in pool C. They'll be out. Chapman out. Suwannee out. That's your top 25. Grinnell is 26th, and that is the big one that we are waiting on. So I don't know what that determination will happen, but that is what we're looking at on the women's side. The good news is we've got a little bit of time to play with on that. On the men's side, though, we've got a conference call on Monday to determine who's in and out of nationals. Okay. The top of the order, not a whole lot of movement, but we did have some movement in the rankings from just a couple of days. So one switch was Lynchburg and Huntington switched spots. Lynchburg up to sixth, Huntington down to seventh. Then you had Aurora up one, St. John's up one. Suwannee went from 9 to 11 after they lose in the SAA. Texas at Dallas, even though they lost, moved up a spot and CMS moved back a spot. So Claremont Mud Scripps moves back a spot because they lost to Redlands. And then Bethel comes up because there was a Minnesota tournament that was not a conference championship. Bethel wins. They move up from 17 up to 14, but they're already an automatic qualifier, so not much impact. Wittenberg comes down a spot. They're in the NCAC. So that that conference championship is happening this weekend. So you got all kinds of movement. Babson went up one because Guilford went from 15 down to 18. Hampton Sydney went from 21 up to 19. Pomona stayed right where they were. Averett went from 19 down to 21. You had Redlands up one. You had Franklin and Marshall jump way up to 23. And Kenyon went from 22 back to 24. So tons and tons of movement on the men's side, especially in that 10 to 25 range. We have the rankings moving all over the place. All right, so but remember, on the men's side, we've got one pool B spot and eight pool C spots. And I don't think there's a question on the men's side. I screwed up the CCES one. Nobody had that question because I got about 17 pings or emails or IMs or what have you that said Huntington's pool B. I'm like, I thought it was this year. It's next year. So let's go down the list. Methodist, automatic qualifier, number one in the country. Emory, pool B. They get the one pool B spot, which has pushed all the other pool B teams into pool C. So Carnegie was pool B. They get the first at-large bid, so we're down to seven. Oglethorpe is an automatic qualifier. Illinois Wesleyan is next. They will be an automatic qualifier. Lynchburg, an automatic qualifier. Huntington is pool B. They get the second at-large pool C spot because pool B is already full. Washington and Lee is currently eighth. They are pool C. They get the third at-large. Aurora, they get their automatic qualifier. St. John's is 10th. They are the fourth pool C team in. Sewanee is 11th. They are the fifth pool C team in. Texas at Dallas, even though they lost, they're still the number 12 team in the country. They get the sixth at-large bid. So we only have two left, and one of them's going right after this, Claremont Mud Scripps, who fell from 12 down to 13. They get the seventh at-large bid. Bethel is an automatic qualifier. Then we expect Wittenberg to win the NCAC. If Wittenberg does not win, well, they're going to need to hold that spot because two spots, if they fall two spots for losing that, they're not going to nationals because Shriner is at 16. They're an automatic qualifier. And Babson, who moved up from 18, they're pool B, which means they're in pool C. And right now I have them getting the eighth spot, eighth and final spot in nationals. Now, again, I don't know how much these rankings are being used. I hope they're looking through it with the old pencil and paper like we used to do back in, you know, the 90s when I was playing in Division III golf and looking at head-to-heads and things like that. But if we're going by these rankings, Babson at 17 is the last team in. Guilford, who was at 15 and fell to 18, is the first team out. Hampton Sydney out, Pomona out, Averett out. Redlands is an automatic qualifier. Franklin and Marshall qualifier. Kenyon is also in the NCAC. So they're the team that if they can figure out a way to beat Wittenberg, they could get in the 20s and move all of the at-large bids up another spot. And then Letourneau jumped up to 26th. Everybody else is pool C. There's two more pool B teams. There's Christopher Newport pool B and Wisconsin Eau Claire pool B. They got zero chance because they can't even win a conference championship tournament to get in. And I think a couple of them played in some other tournaments. It's fine. So what I find interesting here is had Huntington had an at-large bid, it would have moved everybody up another spot because Piedmont would have gotten in and that would have been a bid steal. But because they didn't, Piedmont does not steal a bid because they're not in the top 25. And okay, Huntington still gets in the second at-large spot. So again, what's going to happen with the rankings? I really don't know. I think the NCAC will be interesting this weekend. You know, will Wittenberg hold serve? If Wittenberg holds serve, I think you're going to see pretty much where they are. But a lot of these teams are really close. So like Babson and Guilford are separated by 0.06 points in the rankings. I have no idea how or why because I haven't had it all year. But something could happen that would make it Guilford above Babson and then they're in versus Babson. I have no idea how or why, but hey, stranger things have happened in the how these rankings are calculated. So that's kind of the scene here from a rankings perspective, who's in, who's out. First of all, if you know you're in an automatic qualifier, congratulations. There's not a better feeling in the world than knowing you're going to get to go to nationals. They're going to fly you out there. They're going to take good care of you. They'll feed you. It's usually a fantastic event. What I'm really excited about is that we are going to be there, and we are going to be there in spades, pun intended, for Las Vegas. But here is the schedule. And so for all my loyal podcast listeners, the first thing you need to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've put it out on Instagram and Twitter. Subscribe to that YouTube channel, because we have going to be putting a lot of stuff out on YouTube for our live shows. We've added some software and figured out how to do some cool things. So we're really excited about that. So here's what you should anticipate from a Nationals week here in 2 weeks. Okay. On Sunday, there is the NCAA block party where they do the Elite 90 Awards and GCA All-Region Team. We are going to do our best to provide that live on our YouTube channel. We're going to do whatever we can to try to produce that thing as best up as we can, so that if you are not there and you want to watch, and if your kid or your buddies or anybody else, we're going to put that out on our YouTube channel live. The good news is that's going to live out there for a while, and moms and dads, let us know if we need to get you a copy of a portion of it. We can help you with do that. So the first live thing is going to be Sunday, the awards ceremony. Okay. So people are flying in Saturday, practice rounds Sunday and Monday. Tuesday will be round one. We are going to do a live show after the first three rounds of the tournament. So Tuesday night, we're going to have a live show. We've got a hotel room at where all the teams are staying. And this is for all you teams and people that are listening, coaches out there. Stay close to Twitter and Instagram and the coaches, the coaches text chain to see about if you get requested to come up and be on the live show. We do have one commitment. John King, who's the chair of the committee this year, he is going to come on Tuesday and talk to us about what has gone into Nationals and everything else there. We're going to try to reach out, and if we can find some teams or players that have played well those first 2 days, especially if there's people that we haven't talked about before, we want to get them on our live show. So we'll do a live show Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. Now, Vegas is on Pacific time, so the shows will be late. The good news is you can rewatch them. But we want as many people watching as we can. So we're excited about that. Teams, if you're in the hotel, you should be able to watch. So we're excited about that. We're going to be talking about all of the things about the tournament that day. I will be on the course every day. We'll capture about as much video as we can. We can't do a ton of that, but we're going to do as much of it as we can. And so stick close to Instagram and our YouTube stuff to do that. And then on the last day, on that Friday, we are going to post live the awards presentations for the national championship there after the round on Friday. We'll wait till the weekend and some needed rest for your podcaster to do sort of the final wrap-up podcast as we go down that path. But we're really excited about kind of what we have lined up for you here. We're going to have a bunch of swag with us. So if you find us, hit us up. We'll have a bunch of swag hanging around. We'll have some stuff and prizes for people that come on the live show. We'll have some other things on us when we hit the block party. So look for us at the block party. You'll see me in my D3 Golf Guys Titleist hat. I'll have some kind of D3 Golf Guys merch on me at some point in time. We got a whole bunch of stuff to give away. So go find us at Nationals. We're excited about it. For those of you that aren't going to be able to be at Nationals in person, come live vicariously through us through the live shows. We're excited about that, but we need everybody to subscribe to that YouTube channel, so that'll help us drive up the numbers so we can actually do some really cool things once we get over a certain subscriber level. Okay, I think that's it for tonight. Super excited, getting ready for the national championships. Couple tournaments to watch this weekend. Biggest thing on the men's side, NCAC. Wittenberg holding on. Can Kenyon jump up and get them? Somebody else going to throw their hat in the ring. That's probably the last chance we have for a real big bid steal on the men's side. But then also, we're going to have to kind of wait and see what happens on Monday. How much did the rankings play into the committee's judgment? Who is, you know, how much are the regions kind of impacting this thing? Are we going to be willing to take multiple teams from the same region? All of that will be telling, especially as we talk about the women's side more next week. With that, we will say, hit 'em straight. Cheers.